Welcome to the Six Again podcast, your new destination for all things NRL. Here to bring you everything from team news to best bets are your hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Mutton. Let's kick off.
Hello and welcome into the Six Again podcast. This has been a pretty slow week off the field. We're going to be doing a lot of signings talk, trade talk, rumours, and some interesting selections for the round 21 team list. What I'm most looking forward to, 10-year, what's the word I'm looking for when you celebrate something? Anniversary of the Battle of Brookvale.
How long have you been married, mate?
Oh, shit. Longer than that, actually. And so I'm sitting here with like 2 week growth and a hoodie, cracking a beer on a 8:30 on a Wednesday night. Well, I've got the Olympics on mute on a spare laptop. Oh, and
isn't that over yet?
No, Mr. Frickin' Mood Killer.
Oh, the Olympics. All kinds of fun.
Yeah.
Australians are in a bit of trouble right now too. They can't handle themselves on a plane and on the way home and destroyed a few dorm rooms, I hear.
Damn straight. Celebrate, man. They've been pent up for 4 years. Tell you what, I've watched so much sport in my life and the Olympics I just freaking love. And you see world records, like in swimming, you see world records. You're like, yeah, another world record, rah, 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 unless it's massive. And then in the athletics yesterday or last night, did you see the 400 meter hurdles, first, second and third in the men's?
Were they all Olympic record, world records, all three?
So the guy who won, he was already the world record holder. He broke his own world record again. The guy who came second broke the previous world record as well. And the guy who came third ran the fourth fastest time in history. So between those two and the previous world record, he then ran that.
That's pretty cool.
400 meters hurdles in 45 point something seconds. Are you serious? Okay. That's as close to physically human impossible as you can get.
And in 20 years' time, someone will be saying that because they did it in
38
seconds.
Yeah, that's impossible. But I would see the 100-meter world record getting broken before this getting broken again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This is bigger than Usain Bolt's time in the 100. Like, that's how big this was. This is one of those records that you just don't expect to ever get seen. 45.94 seconds for 400 meters. Most people can't freaking run flat 400 in less than 55 seconds. That's crazy. Anyway.
So, yes, this is a rugby league podcast.
Oh, yeah, rugby league. That's right. I was going to bring you back. There you go. 400 meter flat, 43 seconds. He's 2 seconds slower and he's jumping hurdles. For fuck's sake. Josh Adokar is the fastest NRL player on record at 30.
Fastest man on the planet.
Yeah, according to Gus Gould, because Gus Gould's planet's New South Wales. He's clocked at 38.5 kilometres an hour, top speed. Usain Bolt's average speed for his 100-metre world record is 37.5. So his top speed's slightly faster than Usain Bolt's average speed, but his top speed in the 100 metres was 44-something kilometres an hour. So it just shows how fast these guys are when they leave Adokar for dead. It's crazy. Faster. Absolutely faster. Crazy stuff. But yeah, Australia's killing it.
But in saying that too, that's pretty impressive by Adokar still. Don't write that off.
Oh, no, it's still damn fast.
He does have a football in his hand.
True.
That slows you down.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not something we'll ever know. We actually don't get to see him run. No. So
6 kilometres an hour in running is like fucking quick. Anyway, yeah, rugby league, heaps of signings and stuff. Rugby World Cup's probably been postponed for a year and it's nominate a woman in league rounds. So little bits to talk about from all around the league, but the majority of tonight will be signings and team list for round 21. So let's get into it, eh? Oh, sorry. I've got a double dry hopped black IPA by Hope Estate Brewing. Bitter, heavy, full of flavor, really nice. Goes down well with some dark chocolate. Drink anything tonight, Jared?
I did not.
Excellent. All right, let's jump straight into Off the Rack. We talk about everything happening off the field. Yeah, sorry about that if you heard some commentary in the background, because I had my headphones on. I didn't realize I'd take a mute off my other laptop. So that was the 400-meter commentary. My bad. So this round up on NRL.com, you can nominate a woman in league who's a role model in rugby league at any level. So whether you know somebody who works at your local club, works at state level, works at the national level, and you want to get them some recognition, okay, you can jump on the NRL.com website. There's a heading saying nominate a woman in league role model. And basically you can put in there and tell them who they are, what they do. You can fill it out for yourself. And they're going to be putting all the entries through to NRL.com, and they'll be looking at any questions that are put forward, looking at answering, and then obviously trying to get recognition out to the women that make rugby league as amazing as it is.
Is it anyone you met that you put forward for that?
Oh, I think we talked about, I talked about your mum last year, I think, for this.
Yeah. So my mum, secretary for about 15 years of football club, first aid for every team from under sevens to seniors, put up with Adam and mine and everyone's shit. And if the coach told us to shut up and be quiet for 2 seconds, we probably very rarely listened. But if mum did, everyone shut up. So she had the respect of everybody, and she put in a lot of time and effort around the club from when we were involved.
Yeah, I'd always like to throw out one of my students, Trendy. We've talked about before. Not only is she a really good young player, but does a lot for a local club as well. Completely shuns me every time I try to get her to play union, and because she spends so much time down a rugby league club coaching the younger girls as well. So I'd throw Trendy forward there.
Yeah, it'd be awesome if someone we knew got it.
Okay, so word coming out of the UK is that the Rugby League World Cup has been postponed to at least 2022. This is in large part for Australia and New Zealand pulling out of the World Cup, and it's going to leave a massive hole there. It seems as though the World Cup organisers are going to bow to that decision based on two of the countries.
Only.
Yeah. And it is what it is. It looks like it's going to come out. And Super League now has a massive hole. Rugby League has a massive hole to fill now over in Europe, like at the 2 month gap that was planned for. So they're trying to hastily get together a couple of series for England. So Sean Wayne, their coach, has been in charge for 18 months and has coached one game so far. And they obviously want to get some more data on that, which is what they're going to use the World Cup for as well. And they've still got to find new schedules for 12 cancelled Super League games. So they got a little bit there. It is disappointing. You can see why, et cetera, et cetera. But hopefully Rugby League, the money that they put in over there, they do get back and they can reuse it next year. Hopefully it's in England again next year. I'm assuming it will be. And we're waiting for the official word on that. But it kind of
it's not 100% confirmed. Not 100% confirmed, but they must have just went, look, without Australia and New Zealand, the draw card isn't there anyway, and it wouldn't be a legit win, whoever won it without them. And honestly, I still maintain that a lot of the teams are going to get like a lot of players not playing. I think a lot of players would choose not to play in this competition. So it just won't work out.
Yeah. I'd still say it'd be a freaking awesome tournament to watch without Australia and New Zealand in it, because I want to see who'd actually
win. Watch the qualifiers.
How do you do? What?
Go watch the qualifiers to get into the World Cup. There's games all throughout the ever since last World Cup.
Yeah, but they're not like tournaments.
Well, it is a tournament. It's a tournament to get in the World Cup. The what we call it third grade and lower have to play in a tournament to actually get into the World Cup. So go watch them. It's the same thing.
Yeah, that was long ago. How long? When was that on?
It's been happening for the last 4 years since the last World Cup.
Yeah, see, that's not a tournament. That's like just stage fixtures over a long period. I want to see a big tournament with the Australia New Zealand. That'd be sick.
Point is that it would have been. It's exactly the same thing if a lot of Australian players don't play. It's be reserve grade players playing against each other trying to get in the World Cup, and then whoever's eligible in the NRL to play for that country would have taken a lot of those guys' spots.
Yeah, it would have been sick. But either way, we'll wait till next year.
Like, for example, Dominic Young nominated himself for Jamaican World Cup team. The players that actually got Jamaica into the World Cup are going to lose their spot because Dominic Young.
Okay. That happens in all levels of sport. So, yeah. The swimming relays that Australia and America win, the four ladies that swim in the final don't have to have swum in any of the heats or the semis. They can put whoever else they want in there as long as they're nominated as part of the team. So that happens in World Cup level as well. You play your role to get the better players there without them having to waste their energy. But anyway, we'll see that next year. It's kind of like how Aaron Woods and those sort of players get those positions.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Love it. So the NRL has revised their round 21 schedule. Surprising, everything's in Brisbane and Suva Stadium on the Gold Coast, if there's any turf left, but that's what it is. Lockdowns in Southeast Queensland has been extended to the end of the week. So a lot of things are shutting down around us. My job and life continues to go on as per normal. We were going to be going to the Knights Broncos game Thursday night at Sunshine Coast, but they've been transferred.
Suncorp with no crowd.
Well, Knights and Broncos at Sunshine Coast would have been pretty much the same thing. It would have been
it's been moved to Suncorp Stadium.
I mean, even if it was open for crowds. So I had literally no interest in going to watch the game. I just wanted to see Jared's reaction throughout the game. That's literally all I was going for.
to watch us win.
Oh, I don't care. Just to
sit back and
watch footy and not be involved emotionally either way.
Earlier in the year, we had a bit of a competition. I set it up. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire version of on our podcast. Rob came on. And he actually beat Adam in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He did. He beat him. And he won a ticket to this game. And unfortunately, we're going to have to delay it. So, yeah, we'll get that entry, Rob.
That's right. So, just check. We're obviously going to go through all the game lists as we get to it. So, just give me a heads up there. All righty. Before we get into pretty much everything else, which is all signings and movement news, we will go over the footy tipping results because it wasn't finalised at the end of our last episode. So it was a joke around and there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 who got 6 out of 8, so 12 points. There's a whole bunch who got 5 out of 8 and 10 points, including myself. And if you take that into a total score, it's starting to spread out now with that joke around. So Billy Bulldogs and Ben Liner, 124 apiece. Methodical Flamethrower and Titanius. That's pretty sure that's Kieran, my brother. It's embarrassing. Up there at 123. And then the underscore Irk at 122. And we'll leave it there because that's the top five. So jump on there. A few rounds to go. And it's pretty more. I'd say, there's still about 12, 13 that could still win. If things go your way in the streaking competition, Ben Liner freaking going all out, taking a 4-game lead over me. Jeez, I must have missed it for round 20. You bloody idiot, there was like some givens. Anyway, he's got 21 game winning streak, and I'm second on 17, and Paraplegics is third on 15. Jeez, that's a pretty long streak. So Ben Liner on top of both tables. Well done. All right. going into the 10-year anniversary of the Battle of Brookvale. Can you believe it's been 10 years since Glenn Stewart and Adam Blair had their little biffo on the field and then a bigger biffo halfway off the field? Brett Stewart comes flying in over the top and...
tears his ACL.
He did not. Shut up.
He tried to dog shot Blair and tore his ACL.
He did not tear his ACL.
Yes, he did.
What are you talking about? This is 2011.
Yes, he messed up. He messed up. He injured himself trying to get a hold of Adam Blair.
He injured, but 2011, we went through and won the grand final.
He dog-shotted Adam Blair.
He tried to.
he missed. That's even worse.
He missed. Hey, we said he's the best New South Wales fullback ever because he's played the most. So here we go.
Adam.
There's a great article on NRL.com. They're talking with Jake Dvojevich about this game. He was 17 years old sitting in the crowd at this game, which would have been nuts at Brookvale. And for the context, for those who are new to rugby league, new to the show, don't follow Manly or Storm, that's fine. From 2006 to 2013, Manly and Melbourne were in every grand final bar two, I believe.
Yeah.
Period of dominance for both clubs. We didn't like each other. There were a few players there who generally disliked each other. Kieran Foran is part of the article as well. There was respect there, but they really did not actually like each other that much. Adam Blair and Glenn Stewart got into a bit of a push and shove on the field. A couple of punches were thrown. They got Simmin for 10. Before they even got off the field, they said words to each other and they actually got into another full fight. Before they got to the sideline, both teams ran in. Big biffo occurred. Stewart and Blair got sent off for the rest of the game. Manly went on to win 18-4, and it became known as Battle of Brookvale. And I remember this, obviously, the Manly fan just jumping around the room going, this is nuts. And it's in typical NRL fashion that biffo's now out of the game and they're using this as a promotion going into this round.
Yeah, that
which is just so NRL. We said this is going to happen with that Talakai hit next year.
Yeah, well, it goes back to when they banned the shoulder charge and they used that Sonny Bill hint on Joel Clinton in 2004 grand final.
Yeah.
So it's just shit like that. But what I remember from this is how unbelievably epic it was. And it was wasn't the tipping point, but it kind of balanced the scales to when Paul Gowan hit Nate Miles and it kind of just ruled out. It was the last big brawl of the NRL, rugby league. Last big brawl that you saw in the footy games, but and you heard about it in the 80s, but you never got to see until this one. This is the biggest one I've ever seen. And the fact that what made it worse was it was standard on the field, but when the referee made the mistake of sending Adam Blair and Glenn Stewart off, but he sent Blair off, didn't wait for him to get off the field, but called Glenn Stewart over way too quickly, sent him off for 10, and then they got there way too quick. Obviously, I think Glenn Stewart jogged at him, I think, was yelling shit at him, he was jogging, and then they got really close to each other, and as soon as that happened, it just teed off.
Yeah.
You know, interchange officials, fucking trainers got involved in this brawl. It was huge.
It was so good.
And it's honestly the last you're ever going to see it in NRL standard or something that big.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
I'm watching some of the highlights right now. And
it's a bygone era. Brett Stewart... So they're fighting. He sprinted over, tried to jump on Adam Blair's back, done his knee in, and then claimed he was acting in self-defense of his brother. And I was just, when he heard that, I just started laughing. It was epic. It was awesome. And what
Battle of Brookvale overshadowed, and this is, it's not irony, but it's just how sport works. You had one of the biggest, most violent moments, and literally minutes preceding that was one of the most I'm not going to say heartwarming, but biggest shows of sportsmanship you'll ever see on the footy field. David Williams was going in for a try in the corner. Billy Slater came across to stop the try. Dave Williams' head collided with Slater, and he felt a twinge in his neck. And Slater was literally sitting there holding Dave Williams in his lap to make sure his body stayed still till the trainers came on. He got a stretcher because they didn't know what had happened. So you had a moment like that where these two fierce enemies, and you literally had Slater cradling another player until medical staff could get there. And then minutes after that, it erupted.
Well, Adam hit the nail on the head when he said this was legitimately personal. Like, they did not like each other, these two teams, to a point where this happened in 2011. Adam Blair and Glenn Stewart did not talk to each other until 2016. It took them 5 years for these folks to talk to each other. Like, and that wasn't by people not trying. They were trying to get them together. But this is, and also after they retired, they refused to talk to each other. It's ridiculous. It's awesome, but it's ridiculous.
And so I'm just watching Gavin Badger's the touchy here. And it's just at the moment where he's brought Glenn Stewart in, and Shane Hain, remember Tan Man? Yeah. He's just about to send him off. And you're looking at these two teams, and the cool thing of the article today is Daly Cherry Evans and Kieran Foran, this is their first year in the league from memory, at least Cherry Evans was. So it shows how far their careers have gone now. And they're the only two players left on either team who are still in the NRL or still playing for these two clubs, sorry. Des Hasler was the coach of Manly. Craig Bellamy was the coach of Melbourne. And that's all that's hung over since then. And I'm just looking at this screen. I've just paused it. You've got like Jamie Lyon, Anthony Watmo, Glenn Stewart, Ryan Hinchcliffe, Adam Blair, obviously Slater.
Ryan Smith, Hinchcliffe is running water for Melbourne.
Oh, he is. Yeah. And it we haven't seen it in the NRL. So I get, actually, no, the Roosters, Melbourne, because Roosters kind of took over once Manly's little run there finished. But you had the 2007 grand final, Manly and Melbourne. Then you had the 2008 grand final, Manly and Melbourne. They belted the crap out of each other in each of them. Melbourne went on, kept going through there. Manly dropped off, came back. They had this big battle here. Manly won in 2011, and then 2013, they're in the grand final against the Roosters and lost, and then Manly dropped off.
Basically. As much as I hate to say it, the closest team to ever come close, that ever beat, like come near Melbourne, is this squad. Like I know Roosters won back to back, but they didn't win back to get back to back, and one of them was 40-0. Like that, it was massive. This Manly
team, Roosters, you know, back to backs both against Melbourne.
No, one was against Canberra.
That's right.
But the thing about it is that the elite talent in Melbourne, so, you know, you had Smith, Cronk, Slater, obviously.
Inglis.
You had Hoffman, Inglis, Folau.
Harris?
You had, no, Harris wouldn't have been there at that time.
No,
Dallas Johnson, all these kinds of players. I would say that they're way more talented than the Manly team of that era.
Hey, we had Tony Williams coming off the bench. Come on, man.
Yeah, Stewart brothers, which, you know, they're talented, but they weren't on the same level as these other blokes. Cherry Evans. No, yeah, Cherry Evans and Foran just starting out in their career.
You're selling the Stewart brothers a little short there.
Well, they weren't. Stewart wasn't as good as Slater. You can't even.
No, no one deny that. Was.
Skillfully, Glenn was better than Hoffman. But overall, yes. I put Hoffman above him.
Hoffman's a second rower. So Stewart was playing a lot. Stewart.
Oh, I still put Dallas Johnson ahead of him too.
No, wouldn't go that far.
But yeah, no, like overall, if you put one-on-one against each other, I would put Melbourne a lot further ahead.
Yeah.
But the thing about Manly was
they were rough.
They were tough. They scrapped for everything. And when they needed to, they turned it on. And they had that ability to this. They were the only team I've ever seen ruffle Melbourne. And that's the biggest compliment you give them back then, because they just hit hard all day and they just drowned them out. And it was a good game to watch at all times.
I just watch her then. So yeah, Blair, Stuart got sent first and he was just making sure he was walking slowly so he didn't get off. So Blair caught up and then Stuart looks over his shoulder, says a few words and then just starts swinging. I have to say Blair won that fight. And then the first five people there after that were all Manly fans and they just swarm Blair onto the ground. And then all the Melbourne guys. Oh, there you go. Freaking James Maloney. Forgot he was
there. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, just nuts. And then, yeah, they were talking about what it's like now. For they just that dislike doesn't happen anymore because of, and so the biggest thing is social media and everyone has such access to each other that so many of the guys are mates and they can just contact and talk through the week. And this is only 10 years ago. You sometimes would only see players twice a year and it's the only time you'd ever come across them, especially if you're not in the rep arena. So I don't see anything like this happening again for a little while, even between the biggest rival clubs. It's just very hypocritical of the NRL saying that they've gotten rid of the violence and the punching and all that sort of stuff. And it's one of the feature articles that they have up this week. And things like that, Billy Slater, like the result, all that sort of stuff gets overshadowed because of what happened here. And that's what they're using to promote this weekend. So well done, NRL, and screw you all at the same time. Okay, let's move in on to some signings, room and signings, rah-rah-rah-rah. So a lot of it centers around the Broncos at the moment. So there's news that Brody Croft has been offered or is looking at taking up a Super League option and getting out of his Bronco deal a year early. He's also said that he wants it to be a short-term deal because he does want to come back to the NRL. He doesn't want to be going over there for the rest of his career. So Broncos have pretty much given that the green light. If he can secure a deal over there, because they've got Adam Reynolds coming, they've got Tyson Gamble on the books, and they're also working on a one-year contract extension for Albert Kelly. So
yeah,
if Brody Croft does leave, it's going to open up about $450,000-ish for the Broncos. And
part of that anyway.
Or part of that, yes. So you've also got to look at the fact that the Broncos are going to be paying about $1 million for the next few seasons with regards to Matt Lodge's deal. And they're also paying $250,000 to be a paying guy next year still. So there's money going to players who are no longer at the club. And that's going to happen for at least another 2 years, if not a third, unless they can work something out with Matt Lodge's contract. The Broncos say that by doing this, it's still going to put them in a better position. Tevita Pangai, they had a logjam in middle forwards, so something had to give. That's a lot of money coming off the books for them, and I suppose it's going to help them in the short and long term. So,
he's a strange one for me because I don't usually go against Craig Bellamy, and he's one of the people that Craig Bellamy let go of that didn't light Melbourne up. He wasn't overly flash, but he played within their system. I don't mind this bloke as a player, and I think going to Brisbane was possibly the worst thing for him because he had no development there. He was just thrown in the middle of it, and here you go, and it didn't work out for him. And I think if he went to another club but Brisbane, he would be higher up the pecking order as far as, or getting a contract at least and not having to go over to England.
And he still might. I wouldn't be surprised if there's clubs looking around for maybe a 1 year sort of thing to see if they can get
him back on. He's not a bad player.
No, he's not.
To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys bought him because they've got about seven other halves. Maybe they need more.
Maybe they need an eight. Who knows? So, names on the list. Who would you be interested in? So, they're looking at a middle forward, cheaper, because they don't want to be obviously forking out, and they can't obviously fork out big money. So names like Ryan James, Dynamis Louis, although he looks like he's going to be re-signing for another year at Canberra. Aaron Woods fit the bill there. Nothing jumps off the page exciting to me there. Ryan James has looked like a shell of the player he was since before his knee injuries, and you can't blame him really.
Yeah, we had high expectations for this bloke at the start of the year.
Yeah, and then looking back on it, Canberra wasn't really the best club to be in because they had so many forwards uninjured, younger, who have talent. So as a Broncos fan, Sure, maybe Ryan James on a one-year deal, see if you can tap into some of that old talent. The other Woods, I wouldn't even be wanting near my club. There looks as though there might be a West Tigers reunion there. Could suit both. They suit each other at this stage. Yeah, I don't know. I'm more interested to see what they look at.
Do you know who they need?
The halves.
Someone who's just come on to the elite status, but
they don't have the money.
It wouldn't be worth a million. Someone who's coming as a leader, but not the definitive leader yet.
Do you say leader or elite?
Leader and elite.
Well, then you're not going to get anyone.
I know you're not going to get anyone cheap, but someone like who's a front rower just came up in the last couple of years that surprised Daniel Saifidi. Someone like that who in the last 3 years or 2 years probably has probably stamped his mark a bit more than a lot of forwards like and is consistently churning out over 120 meters per game.
Okay, so.
Someone like that who have the potential they can get to lead their forward pack for a long time, who's got nothing holding them back. I don't know.
They got no money.
That's what
for
I
that.
Reckon they need.
Because you've got Junior Paulo.
Well, see, Daniel
Saifidi next year. And they're looking at 700K.
Oh, no, they would never get him.
No, but Junior Paulo is looking at 700K. Saifidi should be pushing that plus. He's younger.
No, but 2 years, 18 months ago.
Yeah, but it's not like 18
someone,
months ago.
I know, but someone who's in the same stage Daniel Saifidi was 18 months ago. You've got to take a risk because, to be honest, 18 months ago, I wouldn't have picked Daniel Saifidi for New South Wales, but he's one of the first pick now. I don't know who it is, but there's got to be someone out there who they can throw a bit of money in the current club's. Look, find someone like Isaiah Papali from Parramatta, the Parramatta Pulled Him Out of Warriors. Someone like that.
Oh, yeah? Oh, Stefano Udomakanu. That'd be perfect, except he's locked into the Tigers for only $270,000 for the next three seasons.
I actually don't mind that you guys are looking at Luke Garner from Tigers.
Manly.
Someone like... So?
You say you guys...
No, Manly are looking at Luke Garner.
Oh.
Someone like that or Taniela Pisacka.
Well, if you look... No, you're not taking him.
yeah, that's my point. Someone like that. You could still get Pisacka cheap if you threw a bit more money. If you threw an extra 100 grand on top of what Manly are paying him, you probably could get him pretty cheap.
But Brisbane's got a couple of guys like that already with Piakura. You've got Keenan Pisalia, who's been playing in the prop position, and
yeah,
still
I
got,
they need someone.
I know.
Someone
I'm more interested to see what they're looking at in the halves. So if they're going to sign Kelly for another year, if you're going with Reynolds, Gamble, Kelly, I'd want at least another piece in there. We know Kelly. Oh, we don't know he's injury prone, but he's getting into the 30s. Reynolds in the 30s, he's been very good with his body through his career and in little niggle and he looks after it pretty well. So looking at halves that are off contract, if you're looking around 450,000, Ash Taylor's coming off $1 million and he started the Broncos, that would be a 50% slash in his rate. None of us are sitting here saying he's worth $1 million. 50% would be a big pill to swallow for Taylor, but I think he'd also see how that's justified. Would they double up on Melbourne Storm and have a look at Riley Jacks or Cooper Johns, even that after the Brodie Croft experiment didn't really work out? If you're getting really desperate, there's even Tyrone May or Lachlan Lewis. I would not even look at the last two.
Flanagan.
That's big money, though. That's the thing.
Nah, he wouldn't have to pay too much. I think
Bulldogs would pay to get him off the books at this stage, the way that relationship's going.
I reckon the best... I've got two options for Broncos in the halves for next year. I reckon that they... got rid of Milford, I reckon he would have been the best option to partner Reynolds in the halves, just because of the way Reynolds controls and Milford can just run. And if they get him fit,
but that's all we have to do. But I think the thing is, this is money. They don't have that money. They're using up $1 million of their salary cap elsewhere.
I know. I just think that he would have been the ideal one. But honestly, I reckon they've already got him on the books who should play six for them next year. And that's Jake Turpin. He came through as a six. He can defend out wide because he's proven that. And his ball skills are very underrated because he has to make 50 to 60 tackles a game because no other person other than, well, Payne Haas is tackling at the Broncos. So I reckon he wouldn't be a bad option at six because that's where he grew up, playing six. And next to Reynolds, I think, yeah. And then you'd look at hookers. You'd find a cheap little... Oh, it's going to sound
cheap
bad.
Little hooker.
A cheap little dummy half. But no, you fight... Look, and honestly...
Honestly, Broncos needs another distraction.
Or I would... And a lot of clubs aren't focusing on this, but I'd be throwing a bit of a bank at someone like Jazz Tavega at the Warriors to play nine or come on the field anyway. I would be throwing a lot more. I don't think they utilize him as well. I know I always said play lock. He's a lock and he's better at lock. But if they get in, if he gets some decent hooking training at the Broncos, I think having Jazz Tavega, Jack Turpin, Adam Reynolds, and whoever they got a fullback for next year, I reckon that's a pretty lethal spine. I don't mind that.
Left field option there. So a couple other things. So it looks as though Mbai will be joining St. George Illawarra next season. This hasn't been established. It's been kind of slowly bubbling the last day or so. And the big sticking point at the moment, supposedly it's been agreed by the agent and the player, is who's going to pay him. He's on north of $800,000 next year. And the Dragons are expecting the Tigers to cover a portion of that because he is still signed to the Tigers on that money next year. Dragons need a 5'8 or depth at 5'8 because they'll be losing Corey Norman. They're not re-signing him. They've got Ben Hunt, who's had a couple of pretty decent injuries this year. And then they've got their youngsters in Sullivan and they've also got Adam Clune there as well. So a depth piece there in the halves. I wouldn't be forking out $800K for Mbai for a season. West Tigers want him off the books for money. More so, and he's already said he'd prefer to move on to allow the young guys to come through at the club. I could see it working for both sides. West Tigers covering a portion of that, definitely, though. Otherwise, I wouldn't be
actually think this guy is probably the biggest victim of what's happened at the Warriors for last...
Tigers.
Oh, sorry, Tigers for last 6 years now. So despite he debuted in a grand final in 2014 because Michael Ennis got injured, they ended up losing that game and then played the next year for the Bulldogs and then got a big money deal at the Tigers. But he was bought there and I don't even think whoever bought him there knew where they were going to play him. They just wanted him in the team. And he's played center. He's played fullback, halfback, 5'8", fullback, probably in the forward somewhere. Probably got thrown in the wing a few times. He probably played at least 11 out of 13 positions in that team. And I just hope he goes to a team that actually goes, look, mate, here's the six jersey. I think he's a better six than anything else. All year, it's yours to lose. And we're not going to move you anywhere else. Now, despite what happens with injuries, you are stuck cement in that six jersey because he's never had a full consistent run at the same position. And he played Origin a few years ago as well in this flag. And he's decent.
I remember being excited when he got named going, oh, he's coming off the bench. This could be cool.
Yeah, and he has that potential because he's a Noosa boy. He's my age. I used to play against him. He has that potential where he can really solidify a spot for a team, but he just needs the backing of everyone. And he shouldn't be the gap filler throughout the whole team. That's my issue with them. They never put him in a decent spot consistently.
I'd love to see him at halfback, Dewey at 5'8", and Luke Brooks can be the gap filler. Or no.
Well, I don't think many Tigers people would be mad about that right now, to be honest. Like, I really don't.
So this is one that we're going to finish on. I'm quite interested with this, and it's kind of going under the radar because he's had a down season, but teams can talk to Viliami Kikau on the 1st of November as well. So he's on just under 700,000 at the moment. According to Zero Tackle, the figure is... No, he's going to be on the third page now because they've got him at 635. The Fox Sports have him at 700,000. Penrith at the moment have already upgraded Jerome Luai, James Fisher-Harris, Stephen Crichton. Cleary's on $1 million. So whether they're going to be able to match 700, but he's probably going to be looking for an upgrade. They may be priced out of a deal unless they're willing to give him long-term on lower money. So I'm looking at Jerome Luai, 700K for the next 3 years. He picked up. You've got Kikau already on there. And then if you go to the first page, obviously you've got Cleary on 940 to $1 million. And yeah, it's a lot of money taken up at the top of the roster. First question is, do you believe that Kikau has earned his pay packet that he's on now? And would you upgrade him above that to get him to your club?
No, I wouldn't personally upgrade him to get him to for Newcastle. I don't want him at Newcastle, but I think he's earned his pay packet.
Really?
I wouldn't be happy with him, to be honest. But you know, I've been wrong before. I'm happy with Frizzell, Barnett, Watson. So
okay, so take Newcastle out. Like, do you think there'd be a club out there or fans out there who'd be saying,
yeah, 100%, 100%. This guy was a game changer on his best day. And his best days were very consistent last year. I wouldn't say this year, but you know, everyone has their bad years. I just think that for the money he's worth, I don't think he can hold that consistency again like he did last year.
You don't think he can?
No.
So you're saying you'd still...
I reckon he's going to taper off like Fifita.
Fifita's 21. He's younger than Kikau. Kikau's... Oh, Andrew. Okay, phew. I was going to say, so this guy's 26 and should be coming into the prime, 26, 27, 28. I don't think he's justified an upgrade. I see he has the ability to play like an absolute wrecking ball. He's also got the ability to toe the line. Someone like a Hargraves can do at times and not really know where that line is. But he also is one of those invisible players like David Fifita is trying to work out. The difference is he's 5 years older than David Fifita. So this is the sort of stuff, if you're one of the top talents of the second row position, you're a game winner, a game changer, and game winners changes don't go missing all that often if you're in this $800,000 pay packet. And so just to throw some names out there. So on Zero Tackle, they've extended the players whose salaries have been made public. So those that are on exactly 700K moving forward, who would you have out of these players? Tohu Harris or Kikau?
Harris.
Frizzell or Kikau?
Frizzell.
Fasamawali or Kikau?
Fasamawali, but I'd put an asterisk next to that because I don't think he's played overly well this year for Gold Coast.
Okay, and we're talking about consistency of position. He's been moved around a lot more than he has at Storm, but it's the difference in club. All right, so they're all second rows. Jai Arrow. Okay, so that's 4 for 4. Angus Crichton. So he's on 720. And if Kikau's management's looking at 800,000 plus, are you as a club going to be able to justify, I can get players of this caliber around 700 to 750? I'm not paying 800, 850 for Kikau. Can he win me games? Yes, he can. But over a whole season, Tohu Harris, Frizzell, Arrow are going to put Crichton, are probably going to put me in position as a team to win more games than winning games off the back game.
So this is an interesting comparison. So a lot's been made of Penrith's development of the juniors and how they have brought in the players to work with them, complement the junior development they've done. So obviously, you know, you've got the record. I think it's like 14 or 15 out of the top 17 are Penrith juniors, which is massive.
Yeah.
And I said this at the start of the year, Penrith have the opportunity to create a dynasty, which they're building on. You know, they've got to win a few grand finals to build that dynasty, but there's two ways to go about it. And it's actually a really cool comparison because we were talking about Melbourne and Manly back in the day. So they did it two different ways. So what Manly did kind of mirrors a lot more of how Penrith are right now from when Manly were at the start, where they had a lot of junior players come through. But what they did was actually, they did it two different ways. The top players took pay cuts to stay together to win grand finals. That's what they did. But by the end of it, Manly actually, and this is what fucked you up, and you're still recovering a couple of years later, you actually back-ended deals. So what people don't, what they are is, say you sign a three-year contract, $1 million a year. What they did was, to fit more people in that first year, they only paid you $200,000.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time, to cover that $3 million, they gave you 1.5 the second year, 1.5 the third year to cover that entire amount. That's what a back-ended contract. That's what Manly did towards
which are illegal now in the NRL. You can't do that anymore.
It ruined Manly and it ruined Bulldogs because it's actually Des Hasler thing.
Yeah.
So he did that, and that's how Manly had that 5-6 years of dominance, and they kept that team together mainly through taking pay cuts.
And I'm 100% okay with that as a Manly fan, because we got two premierships out of it.
Yeah, not the end of it, but you're okay with the middle of it.
Oh, well, so if you look, that took us from that. It was the 2007-8 team that got the back-ended contracts. Your Glenn Stewart's, your Brett Stewart's, your Anthony Watmos, etc., who were still there for the 2011, and they were still there for the 2013 grand final. So we've got two premierships and a runner-up. It's worth it.
They got it. It worked out well. Des Hazard then went to the Bulldogs. It did not work out well there at all. Ooh. They got to one grand final, lost it. And So.
I thought they got to two.
That's all irrelevant.
They lost one to Storm, one to the Rabbit.
That's all irrelevant. On the other hand, how Melbourne created their dynasty was they picked three showcase players. So that was Smith, Slater, and Kronk. They kept them, overpaid them, and then moved pieces in around them. So originally when they came on the thing, it was the big four. Greg Inglis was the fourth.
Yeah.
So when that happened, Greg Inglis went away. 2010 happened as well, which they lost all those. That's another story completely. But they kept those three, moved around pieces, created players, and Cameron Smith, Coop Cronk, Billy Slater made them look good, and now they're in the position they are now. So it's obviously a more long-term solution. So it'd be interesting what Penrith do now as far as their contract situation, because like Adam said, James Fisher-Harris upgraded, Jerome Luai upgraded, Nathan Cleary will upgrade when he gets his contract thing.
He's already upgraded.
It comes to Viliami Kikau. And you can't deny this guy had a massive influence on them making the grand final this year and last year, and the fact that they won 17 in a row or whatever it was. But the thing you got to look at is, how are Penrith going to handle this? Are they going to move the players around, Luai, Cleary, and Fisher Harris? I would say they're the big three. Or are they going to ask, turn around and go to kick out, look, we've upgraded these blokes, but can you take a reduced contract to make this team sustainable for a long period of time, like Manly did? So it'd be interesting what happens there, because there's, like I said, there's two ways to do it, but you got to be able to have the right people in amongst the organization. If Kikau hears that and goes, fuck you, I need more money, I need to live, I'm going to get a 10-year career, and go, you need to pay me more, I'm going to leave. Or he's going to go, look, if I win grand final, three grand finals or two grand finals like Manly did, I'm going to earn more money during that period as a sellable commodity as far as advertising and third-party deals and origin, oh, rep games. He won't play Origin. But that's the point, man. Penrith are at a tipping point, and they've got to really work their salary cap and make that decision. And the players need to make a decision as a team whether they're going to take pay cuts or they're going to work the team around Cleary, Luai, and Fisher-Harris.
I think you've hit a couple of nails on the head there. And I think we're not talking about another club here in the Roosters, and they've done a kind of a blend between Melbourne and Manly. So looking at Penrith, what they've already done is they've made their decision. They're trying to do a Melbourne in that they've put out big money already to 3-4 players. The difference here is Melbourne made the decision to let go of the greatest centre of his generation in order to keep the best halfback,
hooker and fullback,
because they have a bigger influence on a game than a centre will. Now, I wouldn't say they overpaid them. I still think they got underpaid based on what they put into the team. That's just NRL's issue overall.
But they were highest paid players.
Yeah, they were the highest paid, but they weren't, to me, overpaid. But if you've got your hooker, your halfback, and your fullback locked in, and you're in the position where they are the best in the comp at their positions, you can then bring in players around them because they're like, yeah, you're not going to get paid as much here, but look who you're playing with. And we're going to win games. And I reckon they were pretty upfront with players outside of your Ryan Hoffman and your Toy Harris and your Finucane and saying, you're most likely going to be here for about 3 years based on our salary cap, sort of whatever. But you've got a very high chance of winning premierships and getting a pay packet on your next contract. That's Melbourne Storm's way. Penrith seem to have done the same thing, but they put their money into a prop, a 5'8", who has talent but has had 1.5 good seasons, and an elite halfback.
But yeah, so the thing about that is you say 1.5 good seasons, so do Melbourne, so does Smith, Slater, and Kronk.
So not we didn't know how long. Big money.
Yeah, but not we don't know how long they're going to last. That's why they were going to last back then. When they started this whole process.
Yeah, I know, but they'd already won a premiership in 07 before their, like, we're talking, because we from 2007 through to 2000 last year is a freaking long time. So it's a hell of a lot of money tied up in players, and you look at them going, can Cleary have a Hall of Fame career? Yes, you can see the talent and the difference, the team. Is Luai and Fisher-Harris and Kikau those same needle movers? From what I've seen, they're damn good players. Fisher-Harris, to me, is the best out of those three because of the consistency and the impact he can have on a game. But I think they've kind of already put themselves in a hole where Kikau's going, okay, we want to win premierships. You've paid those guys big money. I'm in that call. You brought me. I've been one of your best players. I want the same. And then that just lowers the quality of everyone else around. And the position that Penrith are in now, they're trying to do what Melbourne did 7-8 years into building this. You then look at the Roosters, they didn't fork out big money to get players to the club outside of
Tedesco.
Tedesco. Tedesco came over, not on like his upgraded deal. They upgraded once he got there. Cleary upgraded only last year, and he upgraded for unders. The only one that they've really forked money to get was Kronk. And even then it was 800 and something thousand. Cleary is now on 850. He wasn't on anywhere near that beforehand, and he could have gotten more than that if he'd gone to another club. He's a $1 million player at another club. And Tedesco now is on 1.1. So they've brought players from elsewhere that were good. They were already good. They weren't this Melbourne thing where you bring an underrated player and you build them up. Like, we already knew Tedesco was good. We already knew Cleary was good. We already knew Crichton was good. But they said, look, we've brought this Boyd Cordner guy through. We've brought this Billy Smith. We've brought, well, Billy Smith's newer, but those sort of players. They got Hargraves from Manly, took him up. Yeah, they brought all them through. Yeah. Then they said, you know what? We've brought all these guys through. We'll share the money around. We'll get decent players near the end of their contracts. If it all goes well, we'll upgrade them. And they've built a sustainable model to the fact that they've had more injuries than anyone. They're still sitting fifth because of the amount of talent in their squad.
So, and do you know what? Do you know what we haven't talked about? So the three clubs we just talked about, Manly, Melbourne, Roosters. So you had Des Hasler, Craig Bellamy, Trent Robinson. Mm-hmm. Over the last 20 years, they've probably been the three best coaches out of all of them.
Yeah, well, they've been the most grand finals.
So you know, Des Hasler honestly gave so much confidence to his team that Glenn Stewart had the biggest pair of testicles that in the 40-0 2008 grand final, he put a rubber in his own 20-meter line and scored a try off it against Melbourne.
No, against the Warriors.
So obviously, Des Hasler knows how to inspire confidence in his team. Craig Bellamy adapts. We've gone over that. Trent Robinson's one of the best thinkers in the NRL and just knows how to get the best out of every team. And the question I'm about to ask, we can't actually answer until about 5 years from now. But is Ivan Cleary able to do that as well as those three? Is he that coach where he's able to inspire confidence or adapt or just get the best out of every single player as it's such a professional thing? And, you know, he's going to play, he's already got the best out of him for a season. They fell short. So that's the biggest question. And now it's probably the biggest test for Ivan Cleary, because no matter how good Penrith have been, they have not been hit as injury prone. If you look at NRL Physio on Facebook, they actually had this really cool graph of 2021 injuries for teams who've had the most players out for more than 5 weeks. It's really, really cool. And he hasn't had that until now. And full credit to him, they've actually won a few games without their best players. But that's where the Trent Robinson, that's where Des Hasler, especially Des Hasler, actually, and that's where Craig Bellamy thrive when they got their backs against the wall and they're injured, a few players are out, yada, yada, yada. This is back in 2006, 2007, where Melbourne might have been missing Cam Smith and Cooper Cronk, and they walked on the field. They won the game this weekend when they play against the top team. They won it with their backs against the wall. And that's where it comes down to Ivan Cleary being that player. So we can't know till for 5 years. It's a question mark. The only question mark heading over Penrith is they can hold this consistently. If it's up to Nathan Cleary to get their head right to get them over the line for this game.
Ivan Cleary, yeah. So
I've got to stop doing that.
Yeah, you do. It's fascinating. Penrith are in a fascinating spot right now.
Yeah.
They've been extremely successful last season. Oh, my gosh, he is fit. This is the heptathlon I'm watching. And they've been awesome last year. They were good this year. They're still in a very good position this year. We're talking about like they're not in the eight. They're bloody second. They haven't won anything. Now, if they overcompensate or overpay too many players now, and the core, not the core of the squad, but the external parts, the exterior parts, start falling away and they can't bring the same quality in, their window can shut before it has even been fulfilled. They're still going to have damn good players, but are they going to be able to develop like Melbourne did, or are they then going to start be able to poach from other teams like the Roosters have done? So I think they're the only two spots they've left themselves in, especially if they re-sign Kikau. Whatever decision they make on him, we're not going to know for the years to come. If they re-sign him on bulk money, they win a premiership, and then they can't afford anyone else and their form dropped off, they've got their premiership, it's worth it. All right, so let's have a look on with regards to the judiciary. So Jared Waugh-Hargreaves beat a grade one dangerous contact charge, so he'll be playing. Taniela Paseka got a fine rather than a suspension for the trip. I was actually quite worried about that. I thought it was a clear cut trip, but he had good standing basically, so he's not going to miss any time. Was there anyone else with regards to judiciary?
Everyone else took early guilty pleas and a fine.
Yeah, cool. So, and casualty ward, Jaden Brayley is going to miss Thursday night's game. Chris Randall is going to start in his place. This was due to a heavy fall he took in the second half against the Raiders last week. He'll be rested due to it's only a four-day turnaround. Warriors squad depth has been tested. Murdoch Masilla will not play again this season with a foot injury. Taniela Otakulu has been sidelined for 3 weeks. Regan Campbell-Gillard's out with his groin injury for this week's clash against the Roosters. Sebastian Crist has been ruled out with a HIA. Ben Hunt played with a fractured arm during the loss to the Rabbitohs on the weekend. And there was footage of him like getting treated by the trainer saying, showing that his arm was sore and he continued to play on. We talked about Stags already. And we talked about Laurie already. Yeah. So, team list.
All right. First game tomorrow night. All the games have been changed as we discussed. Broncos versus Newcastle at Suncorp Stadium. For this one, Mitchell Pearce returns to Newcastle with Phoenix Crossland drop back to the reserves. Connor Watson's been named at lock, but that could be a late change with Suaso Sue and Stafford Toe and Jack Johns are the first two players cut from the squad 24 hours before kickoff. Okay, so Broncos are pulling a fast one with Albert Kelly coming onto the bench instead of TC Ribardi 24 hours before. Danny Levi, as discussed, was successful at the judiciary, and he will line up at number 9, and he replaces Jack Turpin, who done his hooker, and Jesse Arthurs comes into the centres for injured Katoni Stags. Xavier Coates and Anthony Milford, two Origin players 2 years ago, have been omitted from the squad 24 hours before. Broncos are aiming for back-to-back wins for the first time since the opening rounds of 2020.
Remember then when they looked good?
Yep, I do. Okay, so I actually complimented the Broncos last week because they can score a pretty adventurous try, which you're pretty impressed. I'm pretty impressed with sometimes, but I think having the confidence of Mitchell Pearce back on the field versus Tyson Gamble and Brody Croft up against him and Jack Clifford, with Ponga to play in the way he is, I think there's just too much professionalism in the Newcastle squad.
I wouldn't go that far. I just think they...
Well, this with Pearce and Clifford versus... with the unknowing of Gamble and thing, there's just so much lack of confidence in this Broncos squad that just through experience of Mitchell Pearce, they're going to end their sets well and be better that way. But it will be interesting. The odds on this one are, let me bring it up. Who do you think is going to win this one?
I'm going Newcastle.
First time you picked them in about a month and a half. Odds are $1.28 for Newcastle and $3.75 for Broncos.
And it just shows where Newcastle is. That's one of the shortest prices that Broncos have been all season. And because they've got a chance to win, obviously. There's a very premature article of Bradman Best being back to his best after a week. Like, come on, man. He's a youngster. He's still injury. He's still growing into his body. So just leave him alone.
Oh,
Jermaine Asako's form's been really good on the wing since his return, keeping Xavier Coates out, or so the Broncos say. Looking forward to seeing Jordan Rickey have another full game at second row. I'm liking what I'm seeing from Kobe Hetherington and how he's progressing. Kenan Palacio, getting another full run at prop. I don't mind that. I just want him on the field if I'm a Broncos fan. The Knights bench is better than the Broncos. Their back row is better. Their halves are better. Their fullback is better. So, yeah, I'm going the Knights in what could be either a high-scoring, quality kind of game. Or it could be a blowout. Either way.
No, actually, not either way.
I don't see the Broncos blowing out the Knights. Not because the Knights can't defend. Not because the Broncos can defend. I just...
Reality of it is Newcastle have to win every game for moving forward. If they lose this, they're going to struggle to make the finals.
Yeah. Broncos moving on to heaps, that. They can't score heaps is what I was trying to say. So it's either
moving on from that, the next game is exactly the same for Raiders and Dragons. So both of them, they have to win this game. So it'll be very interesting.
Oh, I thought you were saying it's the same as in it's going to be high scoring and neither team can defend. It could be the exact opposite. Neither team can score.
And Ryan started with his name to return from a chest injury at lock. Hudson Young shifts to the second row and Corey Harianara moves to the bench. I'm very surprised by that. He's been their best player for about a month and a half. Dunamis Louis has been named among reserves and could be late inclusion. Elijah Anderson, he could be swapped out for Dunamis Louis, but he's named to make his debut off the bench. For Dragons, fucking hell, Cody Ramsey broke his wrist. Hurt his wrist a couple of weeks ago, but he's firming to return. Matt Duffy is unlikely to be a late inclusion. Put Jack Bird at fullback, which I actually prefer him at fullback. I think he's a better fullback than 5'8", but I put him centre above everything else, but see how he goes. Corey Norman shifts from centre to 5'8", and Jaden Sutherland drops back to the bench for allow Ramsey and Zach Lomax to form a new centre pairing. I'm going Canberra just because I think last week was a bit of a blip and I don't think this Dragons team could score a point without Ben Hunt. That is my prediction on that.
It shows where these teams are at with me. I don't even remember who they played last week nor their results. They both lost, didn't they? And they both weren't inspiring in either.
Yeah. Odds on this one, $1.31 to the Raiders, $3.50. So it's pretty well the same as the odds in the last one.
Hey, wait, didn't Raiders got pumped by Knights, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that's saying something. Jesus Christ.
Mate, I've let you go with a few comments of disrespect, but that isn't enough.
I don't understand the Corey Nira. Corey, however,
yeah, I don't get it. Bench.
I get Ryan Sutton's a damn good player. I would be putting Sutton at prop and having Tarpany come off the bench. He's had more experience doing that and he's a good impact player and he's got more he's got more versatility than Hawera and Ira. He can play prop, he can play lock, he can play second row. To me, Hawera and Ira is a running edge player. That's where I want him. Sam Williams, you may as well put a traffic marker out there. The only thing he's done all year is score a double against Manly. God, after 10 sets on the line. I don't know. If Jared Croker could run over people, he'd be having a field day with Ramsey opposing him, but he can't, so that could be interesting.
Are you on Raiders?
Yeah, because they're at home.
What?
On paper, right, they're at home. I don't know. I like Jack Bird at fullback. He's been like one of the few bright spots for the Dragons this year consistently. And I dare I say it, Ben Hunt. And he's not there. So, yeah, I'm not sure where the points are going to come from. I'm honestly not excited about this game whatsoever.
Okay. Friday night game. This is going to be massive. You've got Eels versus Rabbits. Odds on this one, $1.35 to Rabbits, $3.25 Parramatta. Mitchell Moses looks like he's going to line up. Wonga Blake needs to pass concussion protocols and Blake Ferguson for, you know, putting the axe to his head by the looks of it, should be right to play. Oregon Kafusi moves in the starting side with Regan Campbell-Gillard out. Murata Niokora and Bryce Carr will be added to the bench with Ray Stone going back to reserves. For Rabbits, Tevita Totola trained with the main squad on Tuesday. That's a massive in for them. While Parramatta are losing a front rower, Rabbits are gaining a pretty good bloody front rower. Benji Marshall's yet to train the team after only leaving 14-day mandatory quarantine with his family Wednesday. And he said he's going to go on the captain's run and have a bit of run on Friday. So has he been named? Yes, he's been named at 14.
He's been named at 14, but he hasn't trained. So
wouldn't be surprised if Blake Taff goes in there.
See, this is the first team selection where I've got a few actual issues with it. And
for who? South Sydney?
Yeah. Because they've been playing so well of late. I think it's the best run of form they've had all year. And yes, they've had an easy run. We talked about that. The review episode last episode, and I get Wayne Bennett's a master coach and all that, and he has loyalty to his players. But every time Arrow and Murray have been on the field together, it hasn't worked. Their attacks look clunky, and Arrow he's not an edge running forward. And Jaden Sewer, who's had an off year most of the year, the last few weeks he's been damn strong, being the opposing edge rower with Colin Matangi. If I'm going into a finals period against teams like Melbourne, I'll guess Manly because we can score a bunch of points as well. I want as many of my players confident in form as possible. I'd be keeping Sewer rolling on the edge with Colin Matangi because that gives you an attacking weapon on either side. I don't consider Jair an attacking weapon on the edge. It's just not his style of play. And by doing so, I'd be moving Sewer into that edge. I'd be dropping Arrow to lock and putting Murray on the bench. He's coming back from injury, and I just think Arrow's been playing better in that lock position than Murray has the last few games that either of them have had. And I'd be taking Marshall out, putting him on the reserves, and bringing Patrick Margo onto the interchange. And literally just belt the crap out of Parramatta. We've seen what they've done against the top teams, which is nothing. And if I had Tevita Totola, Patrick Margo, Host, and Cam Murray coming off the bench with Sua, Colin Matangi, and Arrow at lock, I'd feel pretty damn good about myself.
All right, but you're still picking rabbits, though.
Oh, yeah, I'm picking rabbits either way. I'm just looking, going...
Okay. So I'm less worried about this side,
how it's set up.
Adam just mentioned everything that was kind of wrong with Rabbit's forward pack. So, you know, all that.
Well, there's not anything wrong with the forward pack. I would just prefer two edge running back rowers on my edge as opposed
to... I get that. But I just see Parramatta's number one weakness is the sides of the field, they can't defend for fucking shit. They haven't been able to do it for 3 years. They have not learned at all. They are coming up against probably the most lethal left side attack on the edge in the NRL. And I just think that Cody Walker, Latrell Mitchell, Alex Johnson is going to have an absolute field day in this game.
I'd rather Sewer there instead of Arrow as well.
Oh, you know, he can come off the bench and play there, right?
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, so I just think that despite all that, and Adam's right in it, Arrow's not an edge running, damaging second rower. He's a middle player. He's just going to hold it and not miss tackles all game and make about 50 of them.
Which That's is important because he's up against either Papali or Madison. Well, it'll be Madison because they won't shift Papali. Yeah, so he needs to be able to tackle. And then Sean Mayne will come on. Just sure, don't expect him to attack as well.
Yeah, so, but I just think that Parramatta's legitimate weakness on the edge is drowned out by the fact that South Sydney are that strong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rabbits in 20 plus.
Yeah. Next game, Warriors versus Sharks at Gold Coast. The odds on this one, 3.10 to
Warriors. You said Moses was back, right?
Yeah, I said Moses back. $1.37 to Cronulla for this one. Chanel, Havis, Harris, Tevita, and Adam Fanua-Blake are on track to replay after recovering from injuries. That's massive for the Warriors. Josh Karen returns to the side. Elisa Katoa goes to the bench. Jas Tavegas moved in the starting side of hooker with Taniela Otokolo sideline with a knee injury. Jesse Rainey has been named to return from an ear infection, but it's a... still in some doubt to play. Matt Moylan continues to be listed among the reserves. We'll have to pass the last of his fitness test later this week. Other than that, no real changes. There will be changes if those works go in, but yeah. I'm actually going to go Warriors on this.
Did you see the, there was lots of words said between Chambers and Dylan Walker because Chambers got up and belted Walker in Manly Sharks last week. And
yeah,
it was a reference to what Chambers was saying.
No, it was rumoured by Paul Kent referencing what.
No, a couple of players talked about it.
Did they? Because if Paul Kent, I only heard it from Paul Kent and I was not going to mention that shit at all.
Oh, I didn't even hear it from Paul Kent. So
I actually find it more interesting what Josh Hannay said after the game. So Will Chambers got up, smacked him, got up and then verbally abused him, had another go after Tom Dvojevic scored, got hooked from the game 12 minutes from the end of it, and Josh Hannay came out and said, mate, like, I don't like it. We're losing by 3 tries. And he's chirping while they're scoring a try. And he came out and kind of condemned him for his attitude on the weekend.
Yeah, that's great. They signed Will Chambers. You knew that was coming.
For that reason, yes.
Yeah, you got to live with it. But Sisoko Talakai, did you see his shot on Josh Schuster?
I heard.
Hey, I said it on the prod. That's right. Like Schuster's not a small person, and Talakai belted him, and I just fucking love watching this dude play. And he was playing in the centers for a period because there was injury to I don't care. I can't remember. But holy crap! No, I've got Sharks in this one. Manly put him to the sword as they should have in saying that Sharks scored 2 tries in the second half when they were down a player. And they seemed to be in enough games. They were coming off a patch of good form. To me, they've got a more solidified backline now. Yes, they are missing Johnson and they will continue to miss Johnson. I don't think Connor Trace is the answer in the halves. I think if Matt Moylan's good enough to go, he'll be in there. Which is going to add a bit more creativity, but especially if Ramian plays, Ramian, Chambers, Katoa, Mulatalo, Kennedy, and Kennedy looked electric last week. And to that point, I was hoping Parker didn't get picked because thank God for Tom Trbojevic covering for him. With regards to the Warriors, great to see Harris Tavita back. I think he was building into quite a decent young player before his injury. Good to see Josh Curran back. I like how Matt Lodge has been playing since his move there. Not 100% a fan of Sirenin at lock. I'd prefer him on the edge. Maybe switch with Curran. In saying that, they got Elise Guitar, so I wouldn't be surprised with a late change anyway. Jermaine Tatuma Brown on the reserves, a bit of a surprise for me. I'd prefer to have him in over someone like Kane Evans. I think he offers a little bit more overall. But, yeah, I got the Sharks in this one. They've just got more to play for than the Warriors do.
Next game, big old blockbuster, Roosters versus Penrith.
Will it be?
Gabriel Hargreaves successfully challenges dangerous contact charge. No further changes. Dale Copley straight onto the wing following the loss of Josh Morris. And then for Morris. Nathan Cleary's chances of coming into 7 weeks are firming, according to partner Jerome Luai. But he's named on the 21 jersey, so there might be a late inclusion.
No.
Stephen Crichton, contrary conduct, out for a week. Paul Momorowski comes into the centres, and your partner, Kurt Capewell. Tavita Pangai Jr. makes his Panthers debut on the interchange with rookies Isaac Targo and Jermaine Hawkwood relegated to extended bench. Mitch Kenny drops an interchange. Makes way for the deviant Apisaa Korosau, while Scott Simon fills the second row hole left by Capewell to accommodate Isaac Yeo's return.
Joseph Manu is going to be running?
Sorry?
Where do you reckon Joseph Manu is going to be
right
running?
Right at Kurt Capewell. This game. So odds on this one. This could be your value bet this weekend, Adam.
How's the talk about Manu going to Union? Sorry.
$3.25 to the Roosters. $1.35. So Penrith. Joseph Manu, they could throw the checkbook at him. I think he deserves it, but I think...
No. He's looking at, like, rugby's not going to be able to offer the same money as he'll get offered here, but...
Oh, they're going to... I heard they're going to offer him an All Blacks jersey.
Yeah, that's worth more than money to some players.
Yeah. But no, I'm actually going to go Roosters on this.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. So we talked about Penrith last week and they were missing five players against the Storm and it looked like it. So they've got Isaiah Yeo back this week. They're still missing Fisher Harris. They're still missing Cleary, Tyrone May, if you want to count him. And they got Coruscant back. So you got Yeo and Coruscant, the two that come back in. Looking still at this back line, Hutchinson has been better than I gave him, than I thought he could do over the last few weeks. And he's really actually been quite an important player and given Sam Walker some stability. And Walker's been very creative, back to his best from the start of the season. Copley and Kieran in the Roosters back line, that's just what they're down to. Obviously, well, it's no idea what it can be. It
covers Momorowski and Capewell.
Yes, it does. And that's the other side of it. And no Brian Tuo as well for Penrith, of course. Who's going to be taking the runs out of their own half? It's not a strength of Dylan Edwards unless there's broken play. Charlie Staines doesn't have a big body.
Doesn't have anything but finishing ability.
Yeah. Brent Nadine covers the ground very well and very quickly. So it may be him. Momorowski and Capewell, I'd see dropping back quite quickly to give him a help going out of there. I think the Roosters' back row is in a hell of a lot better form than the Penrith one overall, outside of Yeo, who's coming back from a little bit of time off. This is a huge game, I think, for the Panthers, because they got towed out by Melbourne. If they go down to a team like the Roosters, and all the social media stuff I saw last week was Penrith and they went down because of injuries. They got no excuse in this one because the Roosters are missing
65% of their salary cap.
Yeah, so you look at Roosters, their number three wouldn't be there, their number five, their number six, their number nine.
11, nine.
No, the 11, Crichton would still be.
No. Oh, he would be. I'm talking about players they're missing.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
So that's all. And three of the four bench players. So I'm going Roosters in this one as well. I think they've just been playing well enough as a team. And they're kind of getting the Manly treatment this year that Manly's had the last couple of times. They've snuck into the finals with that. No one's really talking about them outside the fact
that everyone keeps riding them off.
Yeah, but it's the thing. They're injured. They don't have a chance. And yet they've won the majority of their recent games. So, yeah, I'm going the Roosters and I like the odds. I didn't get my Tedesco bet, but I'm going to back it up with the Roosters getting their win this week.
Okay. Next game at Suncorp Stadium. The biggest game I've seen in a long time. I pumped up last weekend's Penrith versus Melbourne, but you still had doubts about because of the injuries. This one is going to be massive. Yeah.
Can I say Roosters are on a four-game winning streak and including wins over the Knights and Eels the last 2 weeks, two teams with a fair bit to play for.
Yeah, and the team with Moses Sully, Cade Cast, Curtis Searon and Kurt DeLuy on the reserves is pretty impressive.
And this is this is another one where I've got issues with the lineups.
Toa Fofoa Sipley returns to interchange after getting the start against the Sharks. Violet Solopisaka could do it again. Otherwise, stay here we go. Kenny Bromwich will have to get through concussion protocols ahead of face Manly this weekend.
I reckon Jerome they should Hughes. Rest him just in case.
Jerome Hughes looks like he's out too, but calf injury. And with Craig Bellamy's track record, he doesn't give a shit about minor premierships, so I wouldn't be surprised if Jerome Hughes gets benched. Put on ice. Tom Eisenhuth, remember that massive injury to his elbow about a month and a half ago? Is also good to go. So that's huge because we were both sickened by that elbow injury. It went the wrong way. Nico Hines and Brandon Smith have again picked against the start against the Seagulls, but Craig Bellamy could spring a late change. Or two of Harry Grant and Ryan Pappenhausen on the bench. That is fucking huge. They have Harry Grant and Ryan Pappenhausen on the bench.
Week got talked up as a grand final rematch, as it should, Penrith and Storm. And then this week you got Parramatta and Rabbits, and you've got Penrith and Panthers. Roosters and Panthers. to me, this game, compared to all of them, has two of the strongest strength teams injury-wise and two teams that are both in good form. Storm's defense trumps Manly's by a lot. Manly's led in soft tries in the second half of their last two games, which against a team like the Storm or the Roosters or the Panthers will lose you the game. The difference is they haven't been versing those teams. They've had the lead and the points have leaked in. It'll be interesting to see whether that occurs in a tighter game, if it is tighter. I really...
Sorry, before you go, what interests me is that the odds. Have you seen them? $1.28 to Storm.
It'd be about $3. Yeah, something.
$3.75 to Manly.
That's fair.
Massive.
Well, I don't think it is really. I still think people underestimate how good Melbourne is or are.
No, it's the team that scored 40 amount of points they have in the last 5 weeks.
Manly. I'm not worried about Manly scoring points. I'm worried about Manly stopping points. You can look at how many they've scored as much as you want. You look at how many they've let in and against the teams that they've let in. It's worrying. Like letting in 22 points to the Sharks, where 12 of those points were scored a man down, 24 points by the West Tigers, 18 points by the Dragons, 30 by the Raiders, who have them now to score. They're not teams you should be letting that many points in if you're serious about a top four or a semifinals berth. Yes, they're scoring points, but you got a team with Trbojevic and Cherry Evans in it. Jason Saab, when he gets given the ball, Garrick with the goal kicking, they're going to score points. This is the first week on Manly social media where I saw more than just myself really calling for Brad Parker to have a spell. He was ripped to shreds last week and he's in there for his defense. Will Kennedy stood him up twice. He came in and made a poor read, compensating for Kieran Foran, who's one of the better defensive halves in the game. It's not like he really needs help, and got caught out of place, which left friggin' Saab in no man's land guarding two people. If his defense isn't on, he doesn't really offer anything else apart from energy and enthusiasm, which is good traits to have. But against a team like Melbourne, where he's going to have Remia Smith run at him, who beats him for pace every day of the week, he better freaking start this game well. I saw a couple of people throwing out the idea of Cust at 14, Walker starting at centre. I like that. I could go with that. I could just go with a Sully, Brad Parker switch. A switch. Will Smith have Sully for speed? Yes, but Sully can also run over Smith or through him. Parker can't do that. Tom Trbojevic last week, three tries, three assists. I don't know what else he could have done. He was freaking magnificent. Josh Alloway back after a week suspension on the interchange. Curtis Sirenin, I can see why he's getting rested. He's only had a week back. So I'd say Cooper Johns will come in for Jerome Hughes if Hughes is ruled out. I wouldn't be surprised to see Harry Grant and Papenhuyzen start now that Papenhuyzen's had 3 weeks on the sideline. Coming off the bench, sorry. Nicho Hynes only played 48 minutes last week.
Okay. So you going? I'm going Storm on this one.
Yeah, I'm going Storm too.
You really want this tipping thing, aren't you?
Yes, but so I can't wait for this game. I'm even going to put the Olympics aside to watch this whole game because...
Storm versus Tom Trbojevic. Okay, so
Penrith are much more a one-man team than Manly is. Come on.
But the one-man guy for them is not playing. So, possibly. So, next game, you've got Bulldogs versus Tigers. Adam's going to turn the Olympics off for the previous game. He will not for this one. Tigers are going $1.45. Canterbury are going at $2.75.
And after this game, we've got Titans versus Cowboys. Seabus, did I miss something?
No, we'll just do that. Okay, so Titans versus Cowboys, the odds on that one.
We can't do that. That's
$1.31.
That's even more disrespectful.
$3.50 to Cowboys. Going back to the Bulldogs game because Adam's trying to be disrespectful.
Do you want me to go through this one? nothing's changed for the Bulldogs. Ockenbore's out.
Yeah, there's a shitload of changes for the Bulldogs.
Ockenbore's out because he can't catch anything. Renifatoni's out.
No, you've got Bailey Biondo. Odo gets his first NRL start. Jake Averillo shifting to halfback. Ockenbore and Colin Flanagan were major omissions. Ava Cuman Fanangai returns from a head knock. And slots with Dylan Napa for a starting role. James Tamo for the West Tigers is expected to play after missing the game last week against the Warriors. Moses Mbai steps in at fullback for Dane Laurie. And Michael Cheekham has been promoted from the bench to take Mbai's place in the centres. This point needs to go to another club because he is starter or at least bench every other week and he's not getting to run. Poor old Michael Cheekham. Zach Sini has been included on the interchange.
Get that whatsoever.
He could come onto the starting side if Maguire opts for a late switch. All right, we won't spend too much time for this. I am going the Bulldogs because I want them to win against the Tigers because I'm sick of the Tigers' bullshit.
Oh, I just don't. I know Michael Maguire's trying everything. Zach Sini on the interchange. He's that like skinny Ranger guy that made his debut earlier this year, right?
Yep.
I don't see any point What's of him Tom on the interchange, except for he's literally at this stage of the season swinging for the fences and saying, you know what, in a pinch, if this guy can come off and get a line break and score a try, it'll be worth it. If you're going to have him in the team, freaking start him in the centres and have Cheekham coming off the bench or something, because you're not going to shift Mamalo or Nofaluma into the centres because neither of them have probably played there in their lives. Far out. I don't mind the Tigers forward pack. I think it looks pretty good. I like the fact Sean Bloor and McKaylee are both starting. I like the fact Stefano and Meccano starting, three of their youngsters all there together. You got Little there and Leilua. I really like the look of that forward pack for the Tigers of who they've got available. It offers more points and excitement than having Ofengawi or even Alex Twale there, even though Twale had locked things down more. And I believe they're a more talented creative forward pack than that of the Bulldogs. I still don't get how Brandon Wakeham's not getting a run for the Bulldogs, considering who else they're running out there. Maybe he's injured. I don't know. Cole Flanagan should be there. Even if he's having a bad day or year, it's better than what else they've got available. Like, you've got to be a talented coach to make players like Corey Allen look that bad. I don't care. I'm going to go to the Tigers because I can see them scoring points.
Okay. All right, you go on Tigers.
Sure. Fuck, like, there's okay. That. Considering, like, the other games that are on this weekend,
this Sunday's not flash, eh?
So the last one you can actually see some entertainment value, but fuck, man, like, geez, that's going to be a bumper of a game.
Okay, Titans versus Cowboys. Jamal Fogarty remains another chance of being a late inclusion. Toby Sexton, career halfback, has he's done pretty well so far. Aaron Clark with elbow injury is good to go, while Patrick Herbins returns from suspension, pushes Esam Masters back to the bench. I don't agree with that. I rate Masters higher than Herbert, but is what it is.
Come on, Bob.
Fafita has been named to start at second row, but is being benched in the late swap, both Furmore in the last two rounds. Valentine Hearns returns to fullback. Thank fuck they didn't know where else to put anyone else.
He's hurt. Ben he's Bradley, not fully recovered.
And Ben Hampton goes from interchange to the centres. Murray Tulagi shifts to the wing. Where is Dejan Arce?
I like that.
Jason Tamalolo shifts to second row.
Well, you're not picking Arce ahead of Holmes or Drinkwater. And there is superposition.
No, but where is he? Give him a go. I don't agree with Jason Tamalolo with the 11 on their back and Cohen S with him. Hey, they tried that a few years ago. Paul Green did.
Come on, Peter Bowe.
And it wasn't until Jason Tamalolo got in the 13 jersey he became the best lock in the game. So I don't see why they've been the best lock
in the game to the second round. No, I think
for that reason alone, I'm not picking Cowboys out of protest.
I think Peyton He's not going to do it publicly or externally. I wouldn't be surprised if internally he's going, you know what? 64 minutes at lock's not getting it done. If you can play 80, well, you should definitely be able to play 80 on the edge with a lower work rate, and he can focus more on attack. I didn't see it as a bad move. Cohen Hess isn't who I would have picked at lock. I think he's been playing in the prop and has been damaging, so he hasn't had to focus as much on defense because Robson's been able to lock that down. I think the putting him at lock may blunt any of his attacking prowess that he's been showing. I prefer Lachlan Burr off the interchange to be starting at lock and have Cohen Hess come off the bench if he's not at prop. I don't mind the look at Tamalolo there. It's not going to be a long-term thing, but yeah, I think that's probably the best looking lineup for the Cowboys I've seen in a while. That's why I'm going to go Titans.
Stop it. All
right. The 800 men's final is on right now, and there's an Australian man leading going into the last 200, and he won his semi-final. He's
all right, Adam.
Damn near starting. Come on. Come on, Peter.
Write it out for the podcast. Come on, mate.
Come on. Hold on, man. Oh, he's dying.
Oh,
he's
going to
get an Australian man's going to get top. He's going to get fourth in the 800 men final. And he led almost that entire race and got swamped in the last 100. What a run.
He got fourth. Oh, well. Okay, guys, that is the end of the podcast. I'm going to end it here before Adam starts crying.
20 bucks on the Roosters.
He is very sad right now. He's very disappointed.
The athletics at this Olympics. A guy from Morocco won the 3,000 meters steeplechase. It's the first time since 1960 that someone from Kenya hasn't won it.
Awesome. Okay. Jump on us on every platform there is.
Yeah, rate and review on iTunes.
And send us a message if you don't like anything that Adam said. I'm sure everyone agrees with everything I say. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio. Be sure to check out Adam's craft beer choice of the week.